Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. Coming off of our great one-year celebration, like on the moon of Endor, when when we blew up a Death Star, there were furry midgets. I'm not going to say Ewoks, because it's copywritten, but there were furry midgets playing helmets
furry
of stormtroopers.
Furry midgets is public domain, by the way.
That is. It just came public domain. It was taken by Hans Christian Andersen for a long time, and it just became public domain, so we're going to use it. This is officially issue 51. We are coming off of our annual, which we really hope everybody enjoyed.
Absolutely. And coming off of our triumphant first year.
Oh, man. Triumphant first Rumpelstiltskin year that felt like 100.
And this is also the official benchmark where we stop talking about it being a year.
Right. This is the last time you'll have to hear it being a year until 2 years.
We're going to shut up about the anniversary.
About our anniversary, which we've been talking about for 6 months up to a year.
Right.
And just get on with it.
5.5 months from now, it'll be a year.
That's right. You can start hearing about our second anniversary now. How about that? We decided we'd come back in with a story arc. Cole and I are kicking around ideas for what we want to do for story arcs for the year. We've got some real winners coming up for you. But we figured a good one to start, mainly because we're planning on doing this to our show here in about 6 months, is a whole story arc called Continuity is Not Absolute. Essentially, we're going to be talking about retconning for the next 5 issues of this podcast.
Yeah, it's retconning things that come out of left field, the editorial mandates that
right.
tend to drive us all crazy.
Which, I mean, we talk about, we sprinkle them throughout the show pretty regularly when we're talking about whether it be the history of Marvel or the history of DC or weird things that have happened. But yeah, that's what we're talking about. Little do you guys know that about 6 months from now, we're writing ourselves out of the show. There's going to be new guests. It's going to be like a sitcom, and we're going to pretend that it never happened, like Roseanne when we changed daughters, and we pretend
that's
it never
right.
ever happened.
I will actually be replaced by Cousin
It? Is that where you're going?
No, the cousin from the Brady Bunch
oh.
that came out.
Yeah. I'll take.
I think he grew up to become Marv Albert or something.
I'll take. I Dream of Jeannie. I'll be one of the Darrens, and you can.
Oh,
be,
okay. That would be Bewitched, actually.
Oh, is that what that is?
Bewitched was a show where they changed dicks midstream.
That's right. That's right. It was the first instance of live televised porn that right. that anybody could consider. So, the name of this issue, watch this, the first issue back, I'm not going to say it, but the first issue back, I got the name of the issue right.
Yes, you did.
It's called Nothing Lasts Forever, and the number
it's
of the issue.
Chapter 1, Nothing Lasts Forever.
The number of the issue, which is number 51. I am off to a good start.
You got the issue number, you got the story arc title, and the chapter title.
That is a threefer. You guys don't expect this kind of thing for the whole next year, because it's not going to happen.
I don't know. It could be just a benchmark of what happens after
no.
1 year.
It's really not. It's not.
I'm not on the other side of the whole anniversary.
I can't get on the other side of it. I wish I could. So I wanted to talk for a second about what this issue is going to be about. Not to mention that The way I went back and I kind of diagrammed our story arcs when I was thinking about this. I was like, how do we approach these things? Generally, the way it happens is the first issue, it's like somebody gives us a task and we have to figure out live with you guys how we're going to handle that task. No matter how much we've thought about that task beforehand, when Cole and I get together and actually talk about it on the show, that's when we actually figure out how we're going to do it. So that's what this is. This is the discovery phase. Stage 2, which is going to be an issue called I Didn't Know We Have One of These, we kind of start feeling we start training. It's like a Rocky training montage. We're starting to get into the rhythm. We start getting to the rhythm, you know? We start feeling it. We're punching raw meat. We're lifting logs. We're in Russia.
We got the little crusty old guy yelling at us.
Right. Burgess Meredith dressed as the Penguin, except he's 90, yelling at us. Wait, he was probably 90. I think he lived to be 155, didn't he?
I think he was actually, he started, his official stage age began at about 50.
Right.
And so he was probably somewhere around 150 when he died.
I think so. Then by the time we're on issue 3, which in this one is Out of Character, Out of the Blue, out of whack. That, to us, is the climax of the story arc. In our brains, somehow we're wired in such a way that our brains feel like that is it. That's our Friday. You know, that's when we fight the alien ship and we bring it down. That's when Jeff Goldblum and Will Smith fly up and put the Apple virus into the alien ship and it crashes. And we come back to applause and, you know, parades.
Get big steak and egg dinner or something right. like that.
And then issue 4 comes along. And issue 4 for us is like, yeah, we brought the alien ship down, but then Galactus comes out of the alien ship. We're like, whoa,
it turns out that was, it's like Gorgo. It was just, that's the baby.
Right. It's the fake ending in everything. That's what that is. It's whoa. We didn't think we had to do more of this. That's what our brain does.
The fourth part of any given arc, it's like, you know, you're relaxing on the train with the Bond babe and then all of a sudden Teehee shows up. Oh yes, the forgotten Bond villain.
It's right, just shows up out of nowhere. You're like, what just happened? I don't know what's going on. And then by the fifth one, we have to bring him down. That's the story arc for us. So this one, we're going to be feeling out what we're going to do. We're going to give you an intro. What is retconning? What does it mean?
You know, I think just in general, this is a really good venue to talk about. Retconning tends to happen in anything that has a long history and continuity.
Right.
But the actual term as we know it, though it wasn't necessarily originated, it really came into common coinage in the letters page of a comic book.
Yeah.
It's now become in such common parlance, at least in fandom, that it gets applied to when you, say, retcon a brother for Worf or...
anything that changes in that way is considered retconning, yeah.
It comes into play in a lot of places in fandom, but it actually, ironically, got its start in comics, so it's rather apropos.
Right. That's awesome. It stands for retroactive continuity. And essentially what that is, if you're a comics fan, you already know, but, you know, there are people out there that don't. So what that basically means is where you take something, because it's become either so unwieldy, or because, like Cole was saying, there's an editorial mandate that something needs to change, or a new writer takes over and wants to do something differently. You go in and change the history of that comic book to match that idea. Now, there are, you know, good ways and bad ways and different ways and to go about doing this. Some of it comes from, and some of the most interesting things, and I kind of want to touch on this in this first one, because there isn't going to be a good way to shoehorn this in anywhere else. Some of the most interesting retcons for me are the retcons that come into comic books from outside sources. And we've been seeing it a lot now with the movies.
Absolutely.
Especially with the movies, we've been seeing a lot of retconning in comic books based on what happens as they're written in the movies.
You know, that's a really interesting point you bring up there, because you have characters like, a good example to cite would be Batman the Animated Series. Harley Quinn did not exist in the greater DCU until that television series.
Right.
And she was retconned into existence, because she was such a breakaway character. And what's interesting is there were also minor characters like, was it Lieutenant Montoya or something like that? Who, what's really fascinating to me about that, I mean, Harley Quinn's a no-brainer. She was a breakaway character, phenomenally popular. But to then go and take other characters from that series that were minor.
Right.
And say, you know, this deserves recognition as well.
Right. It's insane. And you
get I've got a little secret for you, kids. This, you know, Harley Quinn's a very glaring contemporary example, if you can call what 10, 12, 15 years ago, however long it was.
Right.
Contemporary, which I believe you can, but I think that's one of those things where most people would think that's where the whole idea, actually, that was the first time.
Yeah. No.
Isn't that cool how a television series brought something into a comic that it was based on? But to tell the family secret, Superman owes much to the radio.
Oh, yeah.
Before radio, Superman could not fly. The Daily Planet was the Daily Star. Characters like Perry White and Jimmy Olsen were created for the radio.
Has there ever been a more, is there a more retconned character than Superman? And
I think Superman is like super retconned.
But the thing is, I mean, and we've talked about it a little bit, you know, in other aspects. We talked about it during the Man of Steel show. Superman is whether you like the character as a comic book character or not, Superman sets the benchmark for so many things in the industry. If you're wanting to create something, you start with Superman, and then you work your way down, because he has
exactly.
so much notoriety that you can do it. So it doesn't surprise me that Superman is the bastion of retconning, because you can change him. People like him just enough to keep reading, but people aren't so upset that they boycott the comic.
Absolutely, and also it would be important to point out that the Superman musical brought nothing to the comic.
Nothing.
Superman. Absolutely nothing. But, you know, you talk about Superman being like the ultimate retcon. The interesting thing about the character is, you know, back in his early days, you could write yourself into any hole.
Right.
And write yourself right out of it with Superman.
Right.
And, you know, there are all types of cited examples of some of his ridiculous powers. I remember seeing an article where at one point he, like, willed a bunch of tiny Supermen out of thin air to help with some, you know, whatever it was that...
I can do that.
And apparently he has even cited, by name, the use of super mathematics.
Really? Wouldn't that just be mathematics? I mean, isn't that the universal language?
It's probably the speed and...
precision of said
precision,
mathematics?
Yeah, with which he utilized his...
his skills. So, okay. So that's what retconning is. We're going to go way in depth. We got four more issues of this. But that's what retconning is referring to. Cole, I think I know the answer to this. But I'm going to put it out there. What is your favorite instance in a comic book of retroactive continuity being used? For good or ill, one of the two.
Yeah, that's it. I can cite both, actually.
Right on.
I'm sure you were anticipating the ill.
No, I was anticipating the good, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, when I was looking for some background, just to make sure I wasn't just talking out of my ass about the retcon coming from a comic book,
right,
or having comic book origins, because in fact the term retroactive continuity was then dropped down to retcon to describe a book, and I realized, like, wow, you know, I never really thought about that as a retcon because it was so good. Because at their best, a retcon is where somebody looks at what's already happened,
right,
and they want to take something somewhere, and they make that work in the context of what's already there.
Right. They build it out of the world it exists in.
And when Alan Moore took Swamp Thing over, technically that was a retcon, and I never really thought about it that way, but that was, in describing that, that's where retroactive continuity got dropped, retcon.
Okay. Okay.
It was by some author writing on the subject. You know, when I read that, I thought, you know, wow, I hadn't really thought about that, but it really was a retcon. But you don't think about the best retcons because they make sense. Someone has taken the time to research, look at the character,
right,
find a way to make what they want to do work.
And how many
because
times?
Because there's nothing you could go and cull the entire history of the character and find nothing that would deny you,
right,
this take on the character. And Swamp Thing was one of those that worked very well because,
yeah,
absolutely nothing there. In fact, it basically tied itself to his entire history.
Right, right.
Where it said, basically, you know, he's just this plant creature that thinks he's a man who's turned into a plant creature.
Exactly.
He has all the, or it has all these memories, but it is not the man himself at all. And so it embraces everything that came before, the search for a cure to become human again, like the Thing was always doing.
Right.
Without benefit of that ever being possible.
That's a really cool way of doing it, you know?
Exactly, and it shows a lot of respect for what came before, a lot of paying attention to the history. The opposite end of that spectrum, the other end of that rainbow, as we say, You go from the pot of gold to the pot of shit, and it's like Fonzie trying to say, I was wrong. I have a hard time spitting this out, but... and we're going to talk about this again, so I don't want to dwell on it too much, is Bone Claws.
Okay, so you're going Bone Claws for the worst.
I'm going Bone Claws for the worst example, because I discovered Wolverine in the pages of X-Men during the Byrne Claremont years.
Right.
And there was always an explanation of what the claws were and how they work.
Yeah. I mean...
It's essentially, when you have captions like that, that's like the chorus in a Greek play, or it's like God himself is telling you.
Right. This is this,
the character isn't.
This is the gospel. This is your This is your dungeon master talking. He knows all. He's created the world you live in right now. You know what I mean? Right now in this comic book, you should take it as gospel. That's what it is.
So you can't then go back and make a drastic change, because then it becomes the opposite. Like I said, it's the bad end of the retcon, because no thought was put into it. It's like, we're doing this.
Right.
Willful and it's thoughtless, and, you know, eventually the fanboys just kind of fall in line. And
well, Wolverine, if Superman is the poster child for retconning, Wolverine is has been renditioned by retconning. Wolverine's been Zero Dark 30. He's been drug in naked and put into a cold storage freezer, and like, it's just the things that they've done to the poor guy. Ripped his adamantium out, made him a subspecies of an offshoot, an evolutionary offshoot, not just a mutant, but an evolutionary offshoot that was, a lupine-based life form instead of a simian-based?
Oh, evolved from the wolves, eh?
Right. They said there's a wolf race, including Sabretooth, Wild Child, that whole group, saying that those guys were the lupine. Like, poor Wolverine has just gotten the raw end of retcon.
Oh, I tell you,
like, you wouldn't believe, like, the character somehow has survived in smashing fashion, by the way. You know, he's still very popular, but they have really put him through the retcon ringer every chance they get to do so. They do it. Poor guy. Like, you know, The whole origins of Wolverine thing that they wrote and then rewrote and then rewrote again and then rewrote. Like, well, he doesn't even know his origin. Like, well, no shit, he doesn't know his origin. You don't know his origin. How is he supposed to know his origin? No, I thought you were going to go Crisis for your favorite, because you adore...
Oh, yes, I do.
You adore Crisis, and that was a real retcon. That was, in every sense of the word, we are setting out with the impetus to change the world as you know it. That's
but
what that was.
That is a really good example of, by and large, retconning that recognizes what it's doing. It recognizes a past, and it ties itself to that past. In exactly the same way Origin didn't. And I know there will be people like, Origin was the best Wolverine. I'm sure it was the best Wolverine story you ever read. But it doesn't work.
No.
It was an excuse to find a way to rob Logan of his adamantium and still make him a kick-ass killing machine.
Right.
Because absent those claws, he's nothing but a, you know, hypersensory... He's like a human with animal senses, and he heals fast.
Yes.
BFD.
See, I can cite one, and I can't... I'll do more research. I've read them all, but I need to brush up. But I will cite the Marvel Comics Invasion as one of my favorites and least favorite at the same time.
And I can understand why.
It was really cool. Because of the way that it was done, you know, it was really cool in the way that it was presented. Let's put it that way. You know, the idea that for the past, God, I don't know, 30 years, we have been infiltrated by the Skrull, and they have been taking positions of power secretly.
And not those scrawny, crappy little Skrulls the Fantastic Four fought back in the early days.
Right.
You know, with the hypno eyes, and they're about... You know, they're just like little elves.
They're little guys. They're just little guys.
You just want to put them in your pocket.
But they took So what they did with that was the cool part. Seeing how and where they interjected these, the guys who created it, Bendis and basically the whole staff of Marvel. You know, seeing where they said, okay, this is where we're going to inject a Skrull. This is where it happened. And if you're a fan of comic books, you'll remember the points at which these things happened. Oh, that's where it happened,
So it was a very thoughtful, planned. They went and looked at their history and said, that would work in this context.
It was a very thoughtful way of wiping their ass. And this is what I mean by that. Then they go in and fix every mistake they've ever made. Hank Pym beat his wife half to death constantly. That was a Skrull. That wasn't him. That was a Skrull. Mockingbird left Hawkeye. No, that was a Skrull. anything that happened that was weird or out of the ordinary.
Drunk off his ass? No, it was a Skrull. He couldn't hold his liquor.
Exactly. So all of these things can now be blamed on the Skrull.
Reed Richards ignored his wife and shot. No, it was a Skrull.
No, that's exactly what they did.
No, actually, it was.
No, that was Reed. That was Reed. Make me a sandwich. All of these things that they did, they fixed all of these errors, which was sort of a slap in the face. Because the thing that makes comic books interesting is when you get somebody that writes Hank Pym as a misogynist and then has to recover from it for 40 years. You got to spend the next 40 years recovering from one guy's mistake because it wasn't even a mistake. Because of the time period they lived in, that's called normal human interaction. We've all done that. We've all made a mistake and have spent X number of however long trying to make up for that mistake because it was thoughtless or arrogant or stupid and that's the same thing you have to do in comics. The reason I don't like retconning in this sense is because it allows you to wipe the slate clean. Because you've created as a comic book creator or as a comic book company a Frankenstein's monster that can no longer be controlled. And now you're going to bring it down with an off switch instead of fixing it, and you're gonna erase it off the page like Inkheart instead of actually figuring out a way to fix it that makes sense within the continuity of your book as it stands.
Exactly.
That bothers.
But it also, then you create the giant way to, it becomes a big marketing machine.
Right. And now we're seeing a lot of the retcons and the changes like that be based on what's going on, like I said, in outside sources and things like the movies or TV shows, and not necessarily always in a good way. The death of the costume, which is one of Cole's athemias, if you will, it was fairly prevalent in X-Men after the movies came out because they put them in the leather outfits. The leather jumpsuits with no color, and they just kind of look like you were wearing a leather. You looked like you were going to a Faith No More concert instead of fighting crime. That kind of bled over into the comic books, and you started seeing a lack of costumes and a lack of, you know what I mean? That really bothered me. Like, you saw Wolverine,
absolutely,
in a lot of instances lose the costume in favor of that black leather jacket look. And that's just stupid. That's stupid. You're a comic book character. Why are you doing this? We did see guys like Coulson show up in the comic books after being in, Marvel's whole Phase 1 thing. Show up as a character, which I personally think that one is a good one. That one, I like that character. I'm glad. There aren't any... It's been a while since there was a S.H.I.E.L.D. character that could hold his own.
Yeah, and the S.H.I.E.L.D., you got your Nick Fury, you got...
Maria Hill or whoever, yeah.
Yeah, you got your newer and your older characters. I don't know, Dum-Dum Dugan and
see those
Jimmy
guys aren't.
Woo and,
yeah, that's the thing is those guys aren't around anymore in the cinematic universe or otherwise. That's what bothers me. That's why we need a Coulson.
Absolutely.
So what else? Where you want to go from here, Cole? We're getting into this.
The tide's coming in.
Are you? Where you want to go?
Delving into the meat of this, well, one of the biggest, most annoying retcons to me, and I wasn't even following the title at the time, or at all, before or since, was a little Ben Reilly.
Spider-Man runs a close second to Wolverine for being for awful, awful retcons.
Yeah, you know, the probably the worst convention of fiction or science fiction, especially, I guess you'd have to say, is the clone.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty
the
rough.
The clone became what radiation, what radioactivity was years ago. You know, back in the 50s, if you wanted a giant monster movie, radiation was the answer to everything.
Right.
Radiation was even a plot device in Gilligan's Island, for God's sake. It's budget corn, the ends meet. You know, there wasn't anything radiation couldn't do in the 50s and 60s that kryptonite couldn't do on Smallville.
Right, right. And, it could do anything.
And clones make are just, they're just like one of the worst chestnuts. I think if you are a poor, I'm going to go on the record and say, if you are a poor writer, then you fall back on clones.
Okay.
Because you're not any good. You cannot come up with a good story.
I like the fact that you just labeled anybody who uses clones as
I am universally
not any good.
Yeah, not any good. Time travel and clones are two of the things that really, I mean, you'd have to just impress the socks off me to get me to buy into either of those.
I can tell you one instance of time travel that was done very well, that was a retcon of its own way, in its own way, and is now getting a comeback. This, okay, by the way, guys, as we record this, San Diego Comic Convention 2013 is going on. So just be aware of that. There's going to be some references in here, I'm sure, over the next few episodes.
Yeah, we'll probably be more informed about what we've missed this year.
Exactly.
Number one thing from what I'm just real quick from what I've read so far, number one thing we're missing, lines.
Lines. Yes, we're missing a lot of lines in body odor by not being there.
Right.
That would be the retcon I'm talking about is Days of Future Past. That's time travel,
yes.
That has done extremely well, and we're going to get to actually see it on the big screen. And the reason I brought up San Diego is the head of one of the Sentinels is being displayed there.
It's oh, wow.
Really cool. So if you get a chance to go online and look at that,
I will have to look for that because I was not aware of that one. Kind of like when the Archie the Owl ship was, you know, 3.5 tons of set piece were parked in San Diego that year.
Right, right. So that was an instance where they did retconning very well with time travel, in my opinion.
Now, I will say that I'm painting with broader strokes.
Right, right.
When it comes to time travel.
But clones,
I'm thinking
not so
of time
much.
Travel more as a chestnut.
Right.
But by far, the clone is the worst. Because it's just a simple, ridiculous cop-out, especially in the case of the spider clone. That was just a ridiculous excuse to bring a new character in when there were 100 other ways you could do it. But, you know, it's, ooh, cloning. That's like, ooh, radiation.
I can see your cloning and raise you in the world of Spider-Man. And the only reason I'm glad that this retcon happened, and it's the worst for me. It is the worst for me. Okay? The only reason I'm happy that this retcon happened was because it gave us a joke on USG's collector sector for like a year, and that is the one more day Spider-Man.
I had a feeling that's
yeah. So we want Spider-Man.
I could see you driving into that neighborhood.
So we want Spider-Man, who's what at this point? Even in comic years, what, 35, 36 years old?
Yeah, he's got to be like really starting to get to the point where he's eyeing the Grecian formula at the grocery store.
Right. And so I'm thinking he's like 30, 35 years old. He's got himself a wife. He's got himself a wife. He's got himself a nice life set up. They decide that they want him, that it's not, he has a nice wife and a life set up, and he's now working with Tony Stark, and he's an Avenger. You know, he's got a lot going for him now. But we want to take him back to his roots. We want to take him back to living in Aunt May's attic, having to build your own web fluid. You know, you don't have awesome spider armor or anything like that. You gotta deliver pizzas and sell your pictures to the Daily Bugle. How are we going to do that? Okay, here's how we're going to do it. We're going to have Aunt May shot by a sniper by accident, not on purpose even. Ever in the hospital, Peter wants to save Aunt May, whom is like 297 years old at this
easily point. Easily, she's older than Burgess Meredith at this point.
She dated Alfred. How much, or not Alfred, Jarvis. How much of a better life can you ask for yourself after that?
I can't imagine. I think that she may actually have even dated Moses.
Right. Right. She dated Steve Rogers the first time around.
That's right. And ironically, the second time around, too.
We don't need to talk about that.
That's just the way he swung.
That's right, baby. So he decides that he wants to save Aunt May's life, makes a literal and honest God deal with the devil to save her life. And in saving her life, he has to basically blink his entire relationship with Mary Jane Watson Parker out of existence. We sacrifice a future where Spider-Man could be married, stable, have children, introduce a whole new angle to the story, which could carry it another 30 or 40 years before you have to do anything to it, not have to retcon it, to kill that story and bring back Aunt May, who is, like we mentioned, 790 years old.
Yeah, she is not older than dirt, but she remembers what it smelled like when it was new.
I trump your clones with magic.
I think, yes, magic is actually the oldest chestnut.
Right.
It goes back to Pliny the Elder. it actually has been handed down to us from the ages, so...
So that's my trump card for you.
Magic will always trump science because it's older.
Right, right.
And it is the only thing in comics older than Aunt May.
Oh, my God. There's just so much awful. That's the thing, is there's just so much...
Yeah, the difficult thing is finding the retcons that are quality, that are good. And the quality ones are not the ones that are an editorial mandate, like Bone Claws. It is so painfully obvious that Bone Claws was an editorial mandate.
Yeah. Which, do we know why? Has anybody ever said...
I'm not really certain. But, you know, a good example of retconning or just plain shifting gears, you know, not even retroactively. But the other thing we really want to talk about in this series is not just the things where you go back and, you know, blink things out of existence or conjure, you know, will things into existence that weren't there.
Right.
It's also, we want to talk about the times when, generally by editorial mandate, a character just does this abrupt about face.
Okay.
Everything you've ever known about this character changes from issue, you know, you're like on issue 237, and you pick up issue 238, and you don't even know who the hell they are anymore. And it just happened. There's nothing to go on. It's just boom. And we're going to talk about that later on as well, I think in the third chapter. So I don't want to go into that too much. But that's another example. This is not going to be entirely retcons.
Right.
It's just going to be about continuity in general and how sometimes continuity just takes a back seat to, hey, I've got a really cool idea, but we don't have time to build up to it because I need to, you know, have it out this month.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah.
And, you know, I was following Master of Kung Fu back in its heyday, back when it was still around, the Deadly Hands of Shang-Chi, Master of Kung Fu.
Right.
But there was a huge dispute with the creators and Marvel just decided, well, we're going to kill the series, so there.
Yeah.
And then the Gene Day, the artist who was on it near the end there, died, and I always blamed...
Marvel.
Jim Shooter for that.
Well, how many things can we actually blame Jim Shooter for? All of them. The show Miami Vice could be blamed on Jim Shooter.
Least of which we can blame for Defiant, Valiant, and... At any rate, we...
So what... Okay, so let's do this,
the because... The dispute came there from... This was Jim Shooter here, saying that Shang-Chi had to become a ninja. Okay, number
really?
One, he's Chinese, not Japanese. The Chinese didn't have ninjas.
No, they didn't. No, you're absolutely correct.
Fu Manchu, Sai Fan were ninja-like, but the reasoning for this abrupt about-face, the character, which was one of the best characterized, I mean, the most developed characters in comics, was because ninjas were popular.
Well, sure, of course. You had to have ninjas in everything.
Huh.
Are you kidding me? You gotta have ninjas in everything. They don't even have to be, like you said, they don't have to be near the right race.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Danny Rand. Look at Iron Fist. Like, we want to make
Iron Fist was sort of like Ninja when Ninja wasn't cool.
Well, they wanted to make a Bruce Lee character.
Yeah, that's true. And in fact, early on, Shang-Chi was just a Bruce Lee clone.
Right. But why didn't they keep him and do something different with Iron Fist?
Yeah,
he was actually Chinese. Comic books, guys. Comic books. It drives me crazy. So as we come up on the quarter hour mark, as we often do.
Yes, indeed.
Let's talk a little bit about what we're going to be, the road we're going to be traveling in these next issues.
Yes, because we do want to cover things like, one of my other big complaints is when you have an established character who changes their look abruptly. And I don't mean they just change into a ninja costume one day.
Right.
I mean, like, one, you know, forever they've been... This happens a lot with a more monstrous character. And, like, forever they may be green and scaly, and then the next time you pick up a book a couple of years later, and like, who's that? Oh, that's the Abomination.
You're like, no, it's not.
Why is he blue?
Well, the one that always gets me about this is The Thing. Because how many iterations of The Thing were there? There was the original Thing, which was kind of Lumpy Thing. And then there was Rocky Thing, which is kind of this...
Yeah, you started out with Orange Oatmeal Thing.
Right. Started out with Clayfacian Thing.
Clay was the Clayfacian Thing.
And then you get Lumpy... Then you get the kind of Rocky Thing that everybody knows and loves.
Yes, because that's the classic Jack Kirby.
Yeah, yeah.
Jack Kirby would go out of his way to do things to annoy anyone who ever drew a character. And, you know, the only other person who came close was probably Steve Ditko by making Spider-Man's costume so damned elaborate.
Well, who was it? I'm trying to remember who the writer was that got really pissed off at Ed Brubaker's Captain America. Because Ed Brubaker introduced the Captain America with all the scale mail, all the individual scales every time on his costume. And he's like, son of a bitch, are you kidding me? Whoever was drawing for him at that point was like, you guys are assholes.
Yeah, and you couldn't just do the, like, the Super Friends Aquaman or something, where you just, like, you know, a few scales here, a few scales to suggest.
Right.
There's just, like, this mandate that every single scale has to be drawn in. Which, you know, that's what separates characters like Captain America and Aquaman, the level to which any given artist bothers.
Right. And you do see that a lot in when you change artists. When you change artists, you see what you're talking about. Like, I want Storm to have a mohawk and some cropped pants and a tank top versus, you know, having the costume that she's always had. You're absolutely right. Like, The Hulk is a bad one. The Thing is a bad one. The Thing, when it got all asteroidy, do you remember that Thing?
Oh, wow. I think I do.
It
became like the craggy,
right.
Treacherous approaches to the Borgia Pass thing.
Yes, exactly. So is that what you were thinking with the I didn't know we had one of these?
A bit of that. That also falls somewhere between there and the out of character, out of the blue, out of whack.
Right.
Probably more into that chapter. I didn't know we had one of these as more the... it falls into the realm of the ultimate nullifier, or, you know...
Yes.
You pull something out of your ass because you've written yourself into a hole.
Oh, you like you were saying with Superman.
Exactly. Or, you know, the bone claws is a prime example of that. Ben Reilly is a good example of that. You know, I didn't know he had a clone Spider-Man laying around.
In character, in continuity, out of continuity, the one that always got me for this was Iron Man. Because during the height of the kind of 80s, early 90s Iron Man, you could have a no mention, never a mention in any backstory ever, no matter where you call or dive to get it. If he needed a suit to do a certain thing, it was in the next panel. It was just there. You need to go to Uranus. He's got a suit for that. That wasn't a Uranus joke, but I really wish I would have made it a Uranus joke. In hindsight, can I retcon myself?
I think that the thing about it is, as long as you don't describe the suit as being at all cylindrical.
I'm gonna make a retcon. I'm gonna write myself out of this. Write it back. I'm rolling this back. If he ever needed a suit for anything, it was in the next panel. If he needed to go to Uranus, the suit would be self-lubing. It would just be there.
You had to retcon and go there.
Yeah. I did. Sorry, guys. The 12-year-old came out of me for a second. That's Tony Stark was always the worst for me on that, because he would have literally, or his suit would just have whatever in it. You know,
yes,
you needed.
Exactly. He was the type of character that it was like 60s TV Batman.
Yeah,
where you would just happen to have, you know, your bat thermal underwear on that day. That has built-in bat heater, or the bat clam repellent, or
I think I just explained that earlier.
But yeah, I know exactly what you mean, because he was a character that you could just sort of will things into existence, and it would more or less it's going to get accepted.
Right. And honestly, it's a lot more interesting than having to go through three issues of him building a suit of armor to fight whatever in the fourth, just to say it's there.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the D&D convention, if you not like you're going to a D&D convention, an actual convention of the D&D game, where you would say, if you were running the game, you'd be like, oh, well, there's a bunch of monsters. Well, I you know, there's a rat on the floor. Well, I hit it with my sword. Okay, you do that. You know, it's okay.
Yeah.
We're not going to do combat with a rat. You're like level 80.
We're going to go ahead and let you have the rat. Just because you felt like you had to kill the rat.
Right, that's okay.
That was in the incidental. I was just trying to set the mood. And you, Mr. Conan the Barbarian, Conqueror, bastard man from hell, have to kill the poor rat just because it's in the picture.
Right. So we're just going to do it. We're going to say it's done, and we're done.
Yeah, brave man with the rat. We're going to go ahead and take that as red.
What is, where are we going to go with the dicey hand of death?
Now, the dicey hand of death will probably be the cakewalk for us, because the comics industry has given us just no shortage. The reason I titled this The Dicey Hand of Death is, beyond just a play of words, it just seemed like death isn't very good. The Grim Reaper's not very good at his job.
Right.
You get the idea in comics that the Grim Reaper doesn't like his job, so he does a poor job in the hopes of having to be taken off that particular task.
See, death in comics for me is like George Bush running for president. It's a never-ending wealth of comic material.
Exactly.
Just you
so
know.
Yeah, there is no shortage of the ways in which people have died but haven't died. Everything from the hoax and the dream sequence to retconning to Black Lantern.
Right. Absolutely. To deaths that never even happened anyway, you know, things like the New 52, where it doesn't matter who died, everybody gets to come back, you know.
Yeah, the New 52 should have just simply been called Do-Over.
Well, Marvel has a Do-Over now, too. Everybody gets a Do-Over. It's like Spider-Man says. What's Spider-Man say?
Yeah, everybody gets one.
Everybody gets one.
Apparently,
I still like my title as well. What was my subtitle for this one? The Jurassic Park.
Oh yes, Life Found a Way.
Life Found a Way.
Absolutely appropriate,
because that's what always happens. Like, how does anyone in like the Marvel universe or the DC universe mourn?
Yeah, you just, do you even bother? Do you have a waiting period?
Right. Do you even mourn for people anymore? Because you know they're going to come back at some point. Do you still leave that place set at the table?
And where does that leave normal people?
Right.
You know, you didn't see poor Sue Dibney come back in the...
Right, you didn't see anybody. You're not seeing anybody come back from the 800 buildings in Metropolis that Zod and Superman knocked down.
Exactly, but you know, if Lois Lane croaks that we can always reverse the polarity of the Earth.
Right, we'll just fly backwards because I'm Superman and it's retcon week.
That's right.
So that's kind of what we're going to be talking about during the Dicey Hand of Death.
Absolutely.
And then we got one. Yeah,
we wanted to close things with a bit of an epilogue, in a sense.
We're actually going to close things positively for once. What's up with that?
Yes, exactly. We're not just going to bitch about things. We're going to look for the places where occasionally something happened and stayed happened.
Yeah.
It's rare. A good example of this might be Scourge.
Scourge was a good retcon. He really was.
The thing about Scourge is that pretty much everyone Scourge bothered to kill, which was like the Z-listers anyway.
Right.
Stayed dead.
Well, at least that iteration of them stayed dead.
Yeah. Anyone can pick up the mantle if they're so foolish.
Right. But the people that he offed stayed offed.
Yeah.
So that's good.
I want to be the new Gibbon. Go right ahead.
I want to be the new... you know what's horrible? I don't remember the character's comic book character name, but I remember his alter ego name. His name was Mortimer Tony B. And... he was a frog character, and I can't remember what he was. Leapfrog, maybe.
Oh, yeah, it might have been Leapfrog, because the original Leapfrog was a criminal, and then...
Right, and then the new Leapfrog tried to team up with Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. There's a portion of my mind that is dedicated to knowing the name Mortimer Tony V.
That is a sad, sad thing.
It really is. Oh my God, that is a really awful thing. So we wanted to end it on a more positive note, and like Cole said, find some of the lasting changes, the things that are going to stick with, hopefully stick around, you know, because they're worth having.
And even if they didn't, you know, like this is the title of this arc is Continuity Is Not Forever. At least the things that stuck around for a while before they became retconned or otherwise disappeared.
Right, the things that were worth leaving in for a while.
Yeah, the things that had a little bit of longevity or a lot of longevity. And we'll talk about characters whose changes stuck around for a bit.
So here we are, up against it once again. Cole, what are your final thoughts on this issue, and what are you hoping that we achieve going into this thing?
My real compelling thought for myself on a personal level is I hope I can remember all of the things that crossed my mind during the course of tonight's recording, because there's so many things like, oh yeah, then I'll think of something else and that'll disappear from my thoughts. So I'm going to really have to rack my brain to remember the retcons and the changes and the abrupt about faces and things that just bothered the hell out of me over the years. But also, I think in sharing this, the important thing about this arc is there are going to be things we're not going to think of. There are going to be things that we forgot or didn't occur to us or any number of things. But what's fun about this is one of the things I really hope in a big way with everything we talk about, regardless of our topics or our subject matter,
right,
is I'm always hopeful that we're going to get people thinking about the things we got thinking about enough to make them a story arc or to make them a topic of discussion. And people are going to be saying, I really hadn't thought about those retcons, and they're going to think of ones we didn't mention.
Right, right.
And, you know, have a quiet laugh to themselves that we... how could we miss something so glaring?
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. I'm looking forward to this one with great aplomb. A few of them that I want to touch on, I'm just throwing them out there now. Hawkman, because we've had this weird thing where he was either a reincarnated Egyptian guy or a space cop guy with space wings.
Or both.
Or both. That was a big one. One of the other ones that I came across was Nightcrawler, which I forgot. They retconned him from being just a straight mutant into a demon.
Oh, that's right. And along those lines, there's a major just twists my head off retcon that involves a favorite group that it will literally fall into several of these issues, of these chapters.
Okay.
Because certain members of this group were retconned or had those abrupt characteristic about faces. And I remember the other thing that I want to touch on is not the character retcon, not the comic retcon, the story, the plot, what have you, but when you have a favorite artist who one day bumps his head or God knows what.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you're like, what the hell happened? So everybody keep me on track there. I want to talk about that in a later one, is what happened to your art?
What happened to your art?
And I can cite two very glaring examples of that.
Do it right now. Just name them.
All right.
We'll talk about them later. Just name them.
It's going to be a little off topic for the other stuff. There was a period in the late 80s, early 90s that I refer to as the age of the experimental style.
Right.
Which also came to me to mean, if an artist said, I'm going to start an experimental style, that meant I'm going to permanently draw like shit.
I give up.
I'm tired of being a pro. I'm tired of drawing better than you ever could imagine you would. The lesser example of this, insofar as just, you know, sharp drop in quality, is John Byrne.
Okay. I remember you talking about that a while ago.
Yeah, however, yeah. I have since found out that John Byrne himself has said that his work was never better than when Terry Austin inked it.
Right.
And that may have been part of it, but he also did sort of change his style to something that was a little bit more relaxed, less. It just seemed like he was bothering less. And he did announce an experimental style. Now, the greatest, most glaring, most god-awful jump to experimental style was Keith Giffen.
Okay.
When Keith Giffen was on the Legion of Superheroes, I thought he was one of the best artists in comics. He had that kind of simplicity that Dave Gibbons has.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a simplicity to his line work, yet a tremendous attention to detail that it just makes like, well, anybody could draw like this, but then they couldn't.
But nobody can draw like this.
Nobody can draw like that. That's what makes it so great. And then it just turned into like high school art class. And it was cartoony. The only place it worked was in Ambush Bug.
Right.
But, you know, when you went from... And this was one of those things where I talk about going from, like, issue 237, and then you go to issue 238. Like, 237, you had that wonderful, simple yet complex art style. And then the very next issue, it's like, would you let your teenage daughter draw this? What the hell? And at that point, it's like Tom Clancy or, you know, some of these guys have been writing for 100 years, and then the editors just stop bothering.
Right, right.
It's like, you know, we're going to make $10 billion, no matter what you write.
There's a set amount of money we're going to make for this Jennifer Aniston movie.
Exactly. So we're not even worried about the quality of what you put out, because it's going to sell.
Okay. All right. We're going to get into that and more things later on. We have hit the mark. We are going to have to sign off.
Aww.
for fear of getting retconned.
So, that's right.
So, guys, as always, I want to thank Cole for joining me this last year. Yeah, I said it has been awesome.
Looking forward, you know, in the words of Benjamin Horne in Twin Peaks, always a pleasure.
Oh, always. It's been amazing this last year. The next year is going to be awesome. Thank you again, Cole, for all the work you do and you know, production stuff and for the website. And listen to Catherine's new show. What'd you think? Do we have any idea on air times for that?
Generally, Catherine's new show, What'd You Think, which is our new movie show, will go live anytime there is one. It will go up on a Friday.
Okay.
So by the time you're listening to this, there will already be two What You Knows and probably a third a few days later.
Nice.
By the time this is up, the first one, which was World War Z, and the second, which was The Lone Ranger, will already be up. And the third one, if this be airing on a, this one, it will be airing on a Wednesday. A few days later, on Friday, you should be seeing the What'd You Know, where Bobby Blakey becomes the official co-host.
Very cool.
And the topic of discussion is none other than Pacific Rim.
Pacific Rim, which, if you haven't seen it, do yourself a favor.
Oh, yes, go see it.
Please, just go see it. Do yourself the favor of going to see it, because it's awesome. All right, guys. As always, buy, collect, and enjoy comics. This is going to be a really fun story arc to do. Thank you again, Cole, and thank you everybody out there for listening. By the way, I believe that at some point in the next month or two, Ultron Cafe's sophomore effort will be streaming live for YouTube for a couple days. So we'll keep you
keep
you abreast of that. Thank you all so much. We'll talk to you next week when we discuss. What are we talking about?
We are talking next week about God.
Hold on, I got it. Damn it.
We did so well.
I didn't know we had one of these this next week.
That's right. I didn't know we had one of these.
I'm going to ultimate nullifier your face off with this next one. All right, guys. Talk to you next week. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Talk to you next week, guys.